This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Scott!
I got a bad feeling about this.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. You, me, or nobody is gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Yes, sir!
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Han Solo, I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
Can't wait.
This is the Bart and Han Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It's 1 o'clock in the greatest city in the world. Alan Han, Bart Scott, and your number, 800-919-3776. Get in line early. Busy show again because we have live sports. That's what we have. So there's lots to talk about. And if you want to get on the show, you got to get in line because the lines fill up quickly. 800-919-3776. In fact, we're going to do, we don't often do this, but in this segment, first segment, we actually will be taking calls now. So grab your plate, get in line. The buffet officially open. We got Ian Begley at the bottom of the hour, 1:30, to talk some Knicks as we're waiting for the announcement sometime today to make it official about Tom Thibodeau and then where the Knicks go, certainly from here. But there's a lot happening today. And oh, by the way, if you can't get through, you can get us on social media at Bart and Han on Twitter, Instagram. And we did IG Live.
We'll do it live!
Today, as we always do at 12:30. And Bart and I discussed something that I think just needs to be out there when it comes to baseball and what we're learning. As, again, the Phillies, no positive tests yet so far as they played the Marlins. And the Marlins, yeah, put another one on the fire. Yeah, another player now has tested positive. Bart, I mean, whatever they did in Atlanta, I hope it was fun. But that story's coming out eventually. That this is not a baseball problem, but it is definitely a Marlins problem. And I can't wait to hear about their story about bleary-eyed walking out of the club saying, I was nowhere near her face. What are you talking about?
Where's TMZ? Where's the snitch line for MLB? Because somebody has a story to tell, and they're getting some hush money right now. Because you cannot tell me that 18 people have tested positive, and this wasn't some type of group activity. We know they weren't sitting around passing around the Gatorade bottle. We know they weren't sharing dip. We know they weren't putting their hands in the sunflower seeds. None of that's even available. So how else can you get so many people community type of illnesses because they were gathering around and they were all in close proximity to each other, and it's only a couple of places like a booth, like a private section, like the boom boom room at Magic City, and they weren't just getting wings, they were serving sauce. They were doing something. I mean, because there's no way that no Phillies got it. Nobody that they played got it, but everybody in that clubhouse got action. And they're telling on each other.
There's a story
right
to be told.
Now.
Oh, there's
and
a
I can't
story
wait till
to
that story
told.
Comes out. Then it could be a 30 for 30. Who shot JR? No. Mm. Who got it? Who got Uriah sick?
Yeah, exactly. But it does say one thing. Again, I don't. This is probably not a baseball issue, right? I mean, the Phillies seem to be fine, and they played against them. So you know, the one thing it does tell you, if one team gets it, it doesn't necessarily mean that other team that they played against recently are going to have any issues. So maybe you're learning. So we're learning as we go here. But I also think, though, we are learning that bubbles work, because the NBA and the Players Union announced just before the show that of the 344 players tested for COVID on the NBA campus, of course, the bubble in Orlando, all right, since the last results were announced on July 20th, so 344 players tested again since the 20th. So basically in the last 9 days, they do it again. Zero positive tests. Zero, Bart.
I want to go quarantine, and we need to do our show. I need to be – I feel safe in the bubble. I need to go to that bubble. Nah, it's no women in the bubble. Never mind. I mean, and listen, I'm married.
That's
but
what
I'm
the Marlins are saying.
I'm just talking about being able to just walk around and see people. I don't want J.R. Smith talking about, hey, man, can I borrow a pair of underwear? I only packed for 7 days.
Yeah, there is laundry. Well, you can do laundry, J.R.
And
you can do laundry.
You got to love J.R., man. I only bought 7 pairs of underwear, man. I didn't, ew. Like, was that a new pack? Like, Does Amazon deliver? I mean, when I'm looking at the stockpile of Clorox wipes, it looks like they bought the entire stock.
But you could just wash. Anyways. On the baseball front, on the Mets side of things, they win again, and the Red Sox are really bad, but the Mets offense gets going. But more importantly, another young Mets pitcher has a terrific debut and more promising young Mets pitching. It just seems to be that's the one thing that franchise does right.
Yeah,
David Peterson really looked good. Allowed 2 runs in 5 2/3. The Mets won 8-3 over the Red Sox. The bullpen did the work afterwards, and they needed to. Dellin Betances actually taken out of mothballs, which was nice. Got to see him. But yet, no Edwin Diaz again. Yeah, but wouldn't you just put – I mean, they use Hunter Strickland, which is fine. But, like, wouldn't you – all right, it's a 5-run lead. Let's give Diaz a little – like, just get him out there. Nope. I mean, they just don't trust this guy.
Listen, it got tight for a second, though. You know what I mean? Then they open it back up, man. So it's like one of those things for me.
True.
I don't trust it because, you know, if you get that momentum going and those bats get live over there, you can say whatever you want about, you know, the pitching of the Red Sox, which is horrendous. But they still have Devers. They still got, you know, a lot of capable guys that can put bat to ball. And you don't want to chance it. When you have opportunity to beat a team and you should beat them, you go ahead and you take those W's because we can't have one of those whoopsies, he did it again type of moments. We talked about how tough the Mets schedule was going to be early on.
Yep.
And right now, so far, so good. I mean, that you wish they had did something a little better. You know, you wish that second game against the Braves, they could have pulled that one out and Diaz didn't ruin that one. So now you're like, you know
one
what?
Pitch.
Yeah, but one pitch is all you need. It's like,
they were one pitch away.
Yeah, you ever Amazing. Have those guys. I mean, I tell you what, Kyle Wilson was the perfect example, right? I love Kyle Wilson to death.
Yeah.
And he's a good guy. He was always in position to make the play, but he can never make the play. I mean, perfect technique. It's like the receiver just makes a big play over him, or he makes a spectacular play. And you just want Diaz. Listen, man, I know it's just one out, but get the damn out. Like, we can't even trust you to get the out. Like, why can't we ever have, like, I can see if you're like 90% or even 80%. I mean, you're pretty much 10% whether you're going to get it done or not. And it's like they have no trust and no belief in him. And I don't know. He could be Sonny Gray. He could be Sonny Gray. He could be a guy that if you just give him a change of scenery, the expectations are just too high
for him. Who's taking him at this point? And what you gave up for him, too, it's mind-boggling.
I mean, Cano slaps a couple balls yesterday. And he says that he always starts off slow. But then when you don't know what to believe. What's the truth? Is Cano coming on and maybe he'll move up in the lineup if he continues to hit? Or
Nobody wants to see that at this point.
Or is the Red Sox pitching just horrendous and that's what it is? I think it's the latter. So if you talk about that, man,
You got two more games against them now, which is fine. You got look, you stack your L's against the teams you want to stack L's against. That's what you're supposed to do. Beat teams you should be beating, and that's what you want to do here. So that's what the Mets so far are doing. You get DeGrom today, and that's always good. So now let's see if the offense, which put up, what is it, the 15 runs in two games at Fenway, can they get some runs for Jacob DeGrom in his start? That'd be great.
This is the typical Mets scenario. Put all these runs up, then you look at the ground's going against who? Evaldi?
Yes.
And it'll be a 2-1 game.
Of course.
And it's like they made the ground have to sweat it out.
White knuckle,
then,
always.
Yeah. Then they free swinging when it's anybody else. They don't care because they feel like, we got to score because, you know, we don't know who Peterson is. Oh, DeGrom coming? It don't matter. We'll
see. Get some runs early. Just do that and move on. So the Yankees, again, they've been off for a couple of days here, but they will return to play tonight. They're now, instead of being home or playing in Philly, whatever way, they were supposed to be playing in Philly. I think Cole was actually supposed to start tonight originally, right? No, actually it was Montgomery who was supposed to start tonight at the stadium. Now they'll be down in Baltimore, and so they'll just pick up where I thought baseball did the right thing, just kind of adjusting quickly. The Marlins just need to be put out on some kind of a cruise ship right now until they all get it right. Like, get them out of the league right now, go away for a while. Like the basketball tournament did that, right? The TBT,
yeah,
did the same thing. They had their whole field set. One team got it, and they're like, all right, well, guess what? You don't get to play now. I would do the same to the Marlins. You guys don't get to play. You're out.
You just automatically lose those games.
That's it.
And you forfeit those games when you're able to come back and you test two negative tests in a row and you feel like you can field this team out there and we feel like you guys have learned your lesson and you self-report. how the hell did this happen? So we can ensure that it doesn't happen again. And don't tell me that, you know, we were on the bus and somebody had. Don't give me none of that.
Right.
Tell me what really happened, because if I find out it was something different, it's going to be problems and issues, and guys going to be suspensions.
100%.
It's going to be fines, because you put the entire league at risk. Because if you'd have got the Phillies sick, it would have charged a whole chain reaction around their opponents and their future opponents and their opponents' opponents. And then we'd be figuring out, okay, well, who did they – we'd be contact tracing them, who they played. That was reckless.
Yeah, whatever happened there, the story needs to come out just so, again, you can handle it appropriately. All right, but now it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And, man, we got to get to this. And that is something that I felt – I lamented the most about having baseball play without fans, is that I felt like this takes the Astros off the hook. They don't get booed mercilessly everywhere they go, 81 times a year. They will not have to deal with that kind of public ridicule on a regular basis, where media is in their face in their clubhouse on a regular basis, having to answer those questions. You know, Bregman, Correa, all those guys, obviously Altuve, all of them having to face the music and just, the walk of shame for an entire season. Let it bother them. Let it grind at them. Let it mess with their heads so that they just don't have a good season, because they don't deserve to, especially the way they handled things in the spring. But because it had been so long, we were just happy to have baseball back, and there's no fans in the building, you figure, oh, well, the Astros are still a good team, and now they'll be able to slip right through and not have to deal with this. And then Joe Kelly happens. And we already saw it during, some of the scrimmages that I believe it was the Royals that threw at them a little bit too.
Yeah. Hit them in the eight, right?
But Joe Kelly happens yesterday, and this is something I think that caught everybody's attention. Because, first of all, with Bregman, it's a 3-0 pitch. And then he does, basically a wild thing where he just throws it behind his head. And then, obviously, you see the back and forth. And Joe Kelly's a guy that wants all the smoke. We know that from his experience with Tyler Austin and the Yankees.
Love me some Joe Kelly.
I mean, he's all about it. But there's something about that moment that I know, Manfred can't say anything. But, man, they needed that last night. Because it gave you something to talk about that wasn't COVID-related, and it brought back some intensity. It brought back some emotion. It got everybody watching, everybody debating, and, oh, that's right, we're all united in hating the Astros.
Yep.
I loved every minute of it. I thought it was great. Glad no one got hurt. But, again, now I want those guys uncomfortable in the box. I want them all uncomfortable in the box.
Yeah.
I want them all there just wondering, what's this next pitch going to be? Because I don't have a buzzer to let me know what it's going to be.
Yep, crowd the basins, and I'm going to pitch you inside, get you right on them hands. Go ahead and lean on over here, man. And Joe Kelly is the perfect heel for any movie.
He's all about it.
He's Stifler, man. He's the guy with the punchable face. He's the guy that starts the fight. He's the guy that throws something that, you look at all these protests. He's the guy that throws something from the back and starts the whole riot from going. He's the little fire starter, and that's exactly what he was, all about that smoke. And then he had the nerve to walk off and put some little epithets out there and say some real colorful music, and had Dusty. Did you hear what he called him? Dusty, come
on. We got Dusty, yeah. But we also got a meme, too. We got his face, him making that little frowny look back face, right?
He is the typical, I am rubber,
needed.
I'm rubber, you're glue, whatever you say to me, Boston. And you just want to punch his little face. And listen, he about to smoke, because he's not afraid. He'll take the L and get beat up, but he'll run to the fight and swing first. And if he get the lucky punch and you get hit and knocked out by Joe Kelly, you feel like you just got beat up by your little brother, man. But you're talking about a guy that can throw the ball, close to 100 miles an hour. I mean, he threw it intentionally at his head, but he let him know. It wasn't some type of curveball or something like that. Mm-hmm. He threw it directly at his head to know that I'm throwing at your head, and it was up to Carrera, his responsibility to duck. But go ahead and dust yourself off, bro, but you're going to be picking your ass up off the ground all day. And it's
Talking trash to Correa. It was Bregman he threw at, but Correa, that's when they were talking trash back and forth. And as you mentioned, Dusty Baker, and again, 800-919-3776, did you love it or hate it, what you saw yesterday, what Joe Kelly did, a little bit of accountability for the Astros? Do you want to see more of it? Here's Dusty Baker, the new manager of the Astros, on Kelly throwing at his guys.
Balls get away sometime, but not that many in the big leagues. And, when you throw a 3-0 fastball over a guy's head, now you're flirting with his, ending his career. Then a couple other guys' balls are close. And then you know, what really enraged everybody is when, you know, he told Carlos, I mean, he struck him out. And he told him, nice swing, and see, what are you supposed to do then? And then what upset me is that the umpires warned us. You know, why don't you warn him? You know, he's the one throwing the ball, and, you know, he's the one that started this mess in the first place. So, I didn't like it at all.
Dusty, this is what the hell you signed up for. You knew what you was getting into when you signed up after what these people did. You knew it was going to be retribution and consequences for this. This is no different and equivalent to the people that probably would have threw at Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa if they knew they were juicing. And listen, you talk about people losing their jobs. How about you, Darvish, who could have been a hero for the Dodgers and been living in sunny L.A. for the rest of his years on a nice fat extension? Meanwhile, he has to go to the Midwest and live in these miserable winters in these bad cities to live in. And you took away his sunshine in Rodale Park Drive or whatever you want to call it, Beverly Hills, all that stuff. So you talk about ruining careers when you cheat. Or how about Chapman? How about Chapman? Like, he goes from being a hero to being a heel because guess what? El Tuve knew exactly what the hell was coming. So that you want to talk about integrity, you talking about ending somebody's career, you ended people's careers because guess what? They didn't win. How about CC Sabathia, who thought he was going to ride off into the sunset like
one
Shane, the hero, yeah. One more title, but you robbed him of the opportunity for big-time pitches. He left money on the table to come back to be a champion. How about that? So when you think about the chain effect, you deserve everything you get and then some, and I'm so happy that the players are letting them off the hook. I'm glad that they're patrolling it, that they're making sure that they understand what they did will not be tolerated. Because listen, it's one thing to beat me and you have a competitive advantage. It's another thing to have a systematic way of cheating that gives you a substantial advantage over me. I'm for that smoke.
You willingly do it and then shrug like what? Right? Like, we didn't do anything wrong. Like, right in everybody's face. We didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. We're fine. We don't deserve that. No, you're going to face, you got to face music. This is accountability. It's a great lesson for everyone. Yeah. It's a great lesson for everyone. Go ahead and cheat, but just understand, when we find out, you're going to pay the price. And you can't say a word once you do. You pay that damn price and shut your mouth. And if you're Bregman and everybody else, you shut your mouth. All right.
Yeah,
all right, this is what's going to happen. Now, the only thing I'm going to add to it, before we get this call, again, 800-919-3776, is that Joe Kelly did play for the Red Sox in 2018.
Don't matter.
Well, that's a Red Sox team that's also was under investigation and got some punishment for some cheating as well. Now, again, he's a pitcher. He wasn't benefiting. He wasn't really doing. Yeah, it was all a hitter thing. Just like when everybody says, well, Gerrit Cole plays for the Yankees. Gerrit Cole wasn't banging a garbage can. All right, Gerrit Cole wasn't involved, didn't do anything for him. All right, but it's the batters. I'm just saying, this is retribution. This is accountability. And also, while everybody's talking about the Marlins and COVID and shutdown baseball, that happening last night was actually a good thing for baseball. And quietly, somewhere, Rob Manfred went, thank you, Joe Kelly.
And the crazy thing is, man, I was waiting for the fight, but nobody wanted to get sick. So everybody stand up like, hey, man, you better pay. Ain't nobody putting on
that. That was also very interesting,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah.
Just a whole lot of talking, but everybody knew, like, I don't get too close to that dude. We don't want to get COVID.
Does Dusty have, like, a Neanderthal head? Why is his mask so damn little? His mask is underneath his chin and just above his nose. Like, you couldn't get a bigger mask? Like, you got to keep grabbing it while you're trying to.
You got to work. Definitely want to work on that. Let's take Anthony and Freehold to start us off on this. Anthony,
how you doing, fellas?
What's up?
I could not agree with you guys more, and I don't know if it's reading too much into it, but I'm actually so happy that the Dodgers were the first people to actually do it, and I don't think that it should stop anytime soon because the players did not pay any amount of the price that they should have paid. And, nothing was relinquished from them. And I understand, you can't take a World Series away. But, going back on the MVP, Judge and Altuve, and I'm a huge Yankee fan, so I'm a little biased here. But, stuff like that, like maybe, you could change history in that aspect or just put an asterisk, obviously, with their world title run. But I don't know. You know, not, you, not,
you know, Anthony.
Ask Reggie Bush. But ask the Fab Five.
Thank
that.
You, Anthony.
Like, you know, 20 years from now, if they take their title away and take all their trophies away, 10, 20 years from now, people will forget that they were ever champions because there won't be any documentation, won't be any celebrations, won't be any 10-year celebrations, 20-year celebrations of that team. So, like, yeah, immediately you can't erase who they were, but eventually you can. They'll be forgotten. They'll be the forgotten team that won a title.
I don't want that. I don't want them to be forgotten. I want them to be remembered, just like the, you know, again, just like the whole Black Sox scandal.
Black Sox,
it's something
that
people remember. There was a movie made about it. You remember it. And then you have a guy like Shoeless Joe, who, you know, like there's a, that's a, the best thing about baseball is the stories. I've always said that. It's the one sport that has the best stories. The best stories. And it's a sport about stories. So to me, that's a, it's a story that needs to be told, just like the steroid era. That's why I felt. I think Pete Rose should be, you know, remembered because it's a story. I think that McGuire and Sosa and Clemens and all those, they should be in the Hall of Fame and they should be part of the story. Bonds as well. They should be part of the story. You should not tell that story. You shouldn't put your head in the sand and pretend like it didn't happen. We're not going to honor you. We're not honoring you. What we're saying is you were part of this story and you were one of the negative parts of the story.
Well, tell me this.
You can't whitewash
What should you do as far as for a guy like Altuve, who one day is going to have an opportunity to go to the Hall of Fame? Like, what should you do? Like, should he have to wait?
He was an MVP. He was an MVP and a world champion. Of course he's going to be part of the Hall of Fame discussion, and you should tell that part of the story.
Because it's those moments, right? Remember, he's the one that sent him to the World Series. You know what I mean? Like, those moments are going to
be
all moments.
There's nothing proven with him, though. That's the problem, is that there's nothing that's – there's no proof that he had a buzzer. So that's all speculation. I don't believe that speculation should be part of the story. Anything that is – tangible proof should be part of the story.
Well, we know they cheated. It was tangible proof. We knew that all the hitters knew that they were cheating.
That should be told.
So, I mean, who's to say that he didn't know what pitch was coming? You know, don't worry. In the future, somebody's going to have some type of x-ray stuff where they can go and see if it's any foreign things on somebody or currency or some stuff. They'll figure it out. The truth will come out eventually. Somebody will turn rogue. Somebody's going to turn heel and snitch on like, yeah, Altuve did have this. Then he's going to have a lawsuit or something going on.
All right, let's get to, we got so much to get to. We do have calls to get to as well. I promise we'll get to them, but we've got time crunch, so we go right to Blitz or Prevent.
This is Blitz or Prevent.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right, hockey's back, baby.
Mm.
Did you watch yesterday?
We're going to toss that hockey. You know I watch. What the hell else I got to watch?
Well, they had scrimmages that began yesterday in the bubble cities of Toronto and Edmonton. This is the NHL now. And it's great to see hockey. We have the Islanders-Rangers scrimmage tonight from Toronto. But it was interesting to see how the NHL set up their arenas without fans and social distancing in mind and everything else. After seeing what the NBA did in Orlando, could they replicate how cool it was as you were watching the NBA stuff? So for hockey, I think, Bart, it looked like a Winter Classic game. And Brian Boucher, who's the NBC announcer, who was, by the way, no longer in between the glass. He was in a glass cube. He was in a glass case of emotion.
He's like, in an igloo.
He was a bubble in a bubble. Like, it was amazing. The seats covered up with large tarps, logos. You got camera angles everywhere. The game had like a video game feel. Used EA Sports crowd sound. So Blitz or Prevent, the broadcast experience will not be affected by empty arenas for both the NBA and the NHL.
I do not think so. I love the visuals that they're giving the young crowds that are used to having distractions all over the place.
Point.
The fact that you have all the, I want to call it animatronics. I don't know what I want to say. But it's like all the technology on the side of the screen behind the bench. It keeps the eye moving. It looks like that Optimus. Looks like I'm doing virtual reality, like I'm part of the game within the game. I love, you say Winter Classic. To me, you know, that tells me the Red Wings are outside because they've been a part of so many of those games, whether it's the game at the Big House, you know what I mean? So, like, the fact that it's just so visually stimulating to the eye, I think when this whole pandemic is over with, this is something that the technology that people are going to utilize regardless. I think this technology is here to stay, and it makes the fan experience even greater. Now, just imagine when you have that plus real live crowd noise, and you're able to pipe that type of stuff in. You know what I mean? I think the innovation is really pushing us to the limit, and I'm here for all that.
I'm telling you, if it's...
And yeah, I watched.
Of course you did. You'll watch tonight, too, Islanders Rangers. Hey, if it's visually appealing, it's good for the broadcast. So both these sports, I think, have done a really good job. And shout out to my friend Paul Conway, works for the NHL. He and his group did an unbelievable job setting that up. They put a lot of time and effort into it. And I mean, what a great display that they put on yesterday as they were just scrimmages. And you're already going, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to be watching this. This looks great. All right, on to football. The Chargers and Joey Bosa. 5 years, $135 million extension.
Take that, so Jamal.
He gets $102 million guaranteed. A record for a defensive player. That, of course, is $2 million more than Myles Garrett just a couple of weeks ago. But
told
hey,
you. I told still Jamal. You see what I'm all telling,
right.
Jamal?
All right, but we'll get to Jamal in a moment. Mm-hmm. Blitz or prevent, the two most important things in football are pretty clear. A quarterback and someone that can get to one.
Yes, or one who can protect them. Either or, right? Fair. So, you know, you have that as well. And you see this as well. Myles Garrett gets it. Joey Bosa, ha, ha, ha. You're the richest in the league for about a day, right? So, it's nobody else that can do that. But now, what happens is, now you look at guys like Ndonkwe. You look at guys like Clowney. Clowney's got to say, you know what? There's no way I'm getting this kind of jack. I need to take a one-year deal, so which opens up the possibilities for the Jets to get him on a one-year prove-it deal, because you want to go to a place where you can try and get a lot of stats.
When big market, too. Yeah.
Right, it's a huge market.
Where everybody's going to talk about it, Bart.
Right, and saying the Jets got to pay him because guess what? They haven't had a pass rusher since Jonathan Abraham. So right. If he can come here against an aggressive team, aggressive system, a 3-4 where it's really 5-on-5 opposed to a 4-3, which is what he was in, which means that it's an extra guy so they can double somebody naturally without having leaving the running back in the chip or leaving the tight end the chip. When you got a 3-4, you don't know who is really 5-on-5, and you can add a 6 player to it, and it confuses everybody. So this opens up so many possibilities for the Jets as well. But also, if I'm Matt, if I'm Judon, if I'm Shaq Barrett, if I'm Ndonkwe, and if I'm Clowney, I'm saying, guess what? The ceiling has just been raised. The ceiling ain't the floor, Michael. The ceiling is whatever Joey Bosa says it is, because that's where I'm trying to take it.
You mentioned Jamal Adams. So the Seahawks reportedly now will wait to sign Jamal Adams to a long-term deal. This is according to ESPN sources. That Seattle is reluctant to make a massive financial commitment amid the current uncertainty over how much the NFL salary caps will drop in the incoming seasons, of course. Also, that they kind of want to see what kind of personality they have in him. Apparently, according to the report, Adams is ESPN. Adams understands the Seahawks' position. And, a trade wouldn't have happened if Adams was going to insist on an extension from Seattle right away. So, Blitz and Prevent, can we stop debating now whether or not the Jets should have paid Jamal Adams?
Exactly. I think we don't have to debate it, because you see another team with opportunity to pay Jamal that needs him greatly, and they decided to wait. But remember, this is the same team that had opportunity that made the trade for Jadeveon Clowney and decided not to pay him too. So let's just say Jamal doesn't have a great season. Some young guy emerges. I think they still pay him, but I'm telling you what, the amount that they're willing to pay him may not make him the highest paid safety in the league. And Jamal, once you do get paid, guess what? Megan Fitzpatrick is going to pass you again.
Oh, yeah.
And guess what? The guy that just passed, you know, everybody and Joey Bosa, guess what? They got an outstanding safety that's going to be entering in his third year after next year that they're going to have to see in Derwin James. So it's not about how much you get paid. It's how often you get paid, Jamal. And you could have got way more jack here in New York, because they're going to love you over your body of work that you've done. I am. Their body of work and not just what you've done, you know, for them for 1 year. If this year isn't a great year and they don't go to playoffs, your money and your value drops.
Let me tell you something. Right now, clock integrity, we are on point. So let's do this quickly. Last but not least, LeBron James said yesterday he's going to do away with that usual self-imposed social media blackout during the playoffs. He calls it Zero Dark 30-23, obviously off the movie. But he said it's just something he always does before the playoffs. He kind of gets himself off social media and focusing just on the game. But he said that he's going to have a different mindset this time around, that he won't be turning off his phone. And then he said, I can't afford to. I have to continue to check in with my family every single day. So wait a minute. In the past, he would get off social media, Twitter, Instagram, and all that stuff, just to stay focused. But now he's not, because he wants to be able to still stay in touch with his wife and his kids. And, of course, his mom as well. So, Blitzer Prevent, I always thought Zero Dark 23 was just social media only. What is LeBron telling us here?
exactly that he's a liar. That listen, LeBron, come on, man. This just simply means that now that you're not going to go dark and like starve your fans, all your great fans, that just means you're going to hand it over to your assistant and they're going to tweet from you for you. You're still going to be dark. But listen, dark never meant your family. So I don't know why he would throw that in. I never thought dark meant his family.
Your kids
at the damn game. So you're like, Daddy, I called you.
Well, but obviously Orlando, there's no family there. But
yeah.
Social media, I'm talking about in the past. But all right, so quickly, don't you agree though? If you're an athlete, especially one, you want to win a championship, you want to focus. This don't need to be on social media during the playoffs because you don't need to see the hate, and you probably don't need to see the love either. You don't need to see people telling you how great you are. You need to stay focused. There's no reason to have to be on social media while you're in the playoffs because it can mess with your head.
Yeah, he's going into camp mode. He's going into dark. I'm focusing on everything, all my energy. But now we're in the midst of this social revolution, right? He's probably going to say his voice is too important. He wants to be able to still be able to push the movement forward of the Breonna Taylors, you know, of the George Floyd, of all the things that we
part
have
I understand.
Justice.
Yeah.
So, but that just means give it to your assistant, LeBron. I don't expect you outside of TikTok. I don't think you tweet much anyway.
So we talked a little bit yesterday, Jets-wise, mostly about what Joe Douglas had to say about the Jamal Adams trade and the Jets moving forward. Yesterday, there was some availability also as training camp set to open with Adam Gase and also Sam Darnold. And Bart, I feel like these two guys, I don't know, like these two guys are basically, and this is going to sound so disrespectful to Greg Williams, to C.J. Mosley, to even Le'Veon Bell. But I almost feel, as a Jets fan deep down, these two guys have got to be good this year, both of them. He's got to make the right calls. He's got to be a good leader. And Sam has got to show me something. Otherwise, I don't care if the defense is top five and they're 9-7.
Yeah.
If Adam Gase looks like he's still confused offensively and Sam looks like he still has some issues, I will be concerned at the end of the season. You agree with me?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. This is going to his third year. You see everybody else that's in Sam's class has taken that next step. Now, I know Baker showed it immediately, but then he took a step back. But we anticipate a bounce-back season for him. We haven't seen a complete year from Sam Darnold. I'm hoping that maybe he can learn also from the experience in the room in Joe Flacco, a guy who came in early, who wasn't expected to start, was a lower first-round draft pick, and then only found himself on a team that was ready to win now. And, you know, go to playoff, and then eventually become Super Bowl MVP. I'm hoping that he can benefit from now that he has an accomplished or former accomplished quarterback in the room with him that can be that other voice that he wasn't getting last year from Trevor Siemian. He's getting a voice of experience, a voice of success, a guy who was the highest paid player in the NFL, a guy who bet on himself, and a guy who knew how to deal with strong personalities. Because eventually, if you want Sam Darnold to become a great player, he's got to become a great leader. Part of that is being able to navigate through tough, complex personalities and still be the leader there and understand how you have to communicate with every one of those unique different personalities. Just imagine Joe Flacco, right? Because people want to say that it was a defensive team leaders. No, Joe Flacco became the leader of this team. The defense was always going to be a staple, but it was because Joe Flacco and what he did in that run, he had to deal with the personality of Terrell Suggs, Ray Lewis, Anquan Boldin, Torrey Smith, Ray Lewis. He had to deal with that, and you have to be able to flush all the noise out but still be the singular voice and be the guy that's going to lead him. You're the quarterback. The position demands and requires leadership, having a tough conversations. If Jamal was still there and Sam is doing his thing and Jamal need to get a big dose of shut the hell up, then Sam's going to have to be able to serve that cup. So I want to see Sam becoming a leader. He did a little bit when he took ownership and say, hey man, Gase, you're giving me too much. I need to do less so I can give you more. So let's see if we are able to do that, and let's see if they can have that cohesion. Because if you don't have a quarterback or offense or a guy that says, hey, you know, we need a touchdown, and you trust him with the ball, you want your guy with the ball, opposed you wanting the defense out there to stop it because you believe more in Greg Williams than you do in Adam Gase and his ability to call plays situationally, then you have nothing. because the game always usually comes down, can you stop 4th-and-1 or can you convert 4th-and-1? And, you know, all the great quarterbacks and the great head coach quarterback tandems have that. Whether you want to talk to Mahomes, whether you want to talk about Lamar Jackson, you know, in the Seattle game, hey, you want to go for it? Yeah, hell yeah, let's go for it, coach. I need that type of Jerry Maguire type of synergy between Gase and Darnold this year, because no more excuses. You may not have the best offensive line, but you got enough to be great. You don't. You may not have the best receivers, but you got some that are comparable and that are professional. Crowder, you got two tight ends. You got one that emerged in Griffin that you thought was good enough to give an extension. Have your young, dynamic player to come back that's supposed to make plays. That's another guy.
Hernan's got to become something this year as well, right?
That's about Gase as well.
That's right. I got to ask you this now. Be as candid as you can, but you went through it with Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
And you said something about how I'd rather have him the ball. You know, we want the quarterback. You want to have the confidence that I want the ball in his hands rather than have the defense out there.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel like that on the defense while you were playing? Even at the best of times with those Jets teams, did you ever feel like, man, I trust this dude, he's going to get it done? Or did you always feel like, we, the defense, have got to do this?
Yeah, well, we used to say, hey, no, I didn't. I never felt that. The only person I ever felt that with was when I played with Steve McNair. And, you know, when I played with Flacco and we went to the AFC Championship, he was still young. It was his rookie year. But I believe that I believe that wholeheartedly with Steve McNair. But, you know, Sanchez never got to that point. The problem with Sanchez, they continue to help the defense, not understanding that you help the defense by helping the offense. We didn't need Quentin Copeland. We didn't need D. Milliner. You didn't need Calvin Pryor. What you needed was better offensive players so that the defense can be sitting on the bench. Right, and that's the biggest misconception. You help the defense by putting points on the board and being allowing teams to have to play one-dimensional, not always two-dimensional, where they can run or pass the ball. When they're down two scores and you have a great defense, they're not going to come back and score two scores on you before you can score one. So he's going. But to answer another question, I believe that Sam Darnold is a far better quarterback than Sanchez. And I think that his ceiling is far higher than Sanchez ever would have been, no matter who the coach was, no matter who his weapons was. Sam Darnold is, to me, a franchise quarterback, and I believe that Danny Dimes is a franchise quarterback. Now, franchise quarterback's prime has been wasted. We've seen it wasted in Detroit. Matthew Stafford is one of the best quarterbacks that gets no accolades. He reminds me of like a Roger Staubacher. Not Roger Staubacher, Fran Tarkenton. Okay. You know, running around making all these damn plays.
Who ran for his life most of his career.
Exactly. And that, if you imagine if what he would have been if he would have had the support. I think Sam Darnold is that type of talent where he's a talent.
Think we lose Bart? We might have lost Bart there. All right, we lost Bart there for a second. We'll get him back up. But just the exact point that I think we were both agreeing on is that I love that he's given us that insight about Mark Sanchez, because there was a young, talented quarterback. They made trade up to get him. Those teams had success, but you've got to have more than a quarterback that you draft that you basically are saying, he's going to get us through. Like, that's no. He's got to lead you. Sam has that ability to lead. There's no question that Sam has the ability to lead. Can they get him there? And that's where all the pressure is on Adam. Now, Sam Darnold, we mentioned this yesterday, but he did speak with media yesterday. He talked about Adam Gase and his relationship with him, but Adam Gase as a leader. And
he's the right leader for this team, for sure. I think for me personally, he's helped me grow a ton as a quarterback and learning this offense. I just think throughout the weeks, you know, leading up to games, he does everything that he possibly can to put us in the best position to win on Sundays. And, you know, that's from my experience with Coach Gase. And, I've had nothing but positive experiences with him so far.
Now, Bart, you expect that he's going to say all the right things. I think we lost him again, didn't we? All right, we got to fix this signal. Okay. But he's going to say all the right things, and he has to say all the right things. But it's really going to be about what Adam Gase does with it. It really is going to be about how the two of them get together. Now, you heard Bart mention also that Sam's got to be able to go to the coach and say, you got to give me less so I can give you more. That's something that happened last season, if you remember. He finally, and I think Adam said he was waiting for it. where Sam Darnold went to Adam and said, you got to peel back this playbook. This is just way too much. And he got more comfortable as he got more comfortable with the playbook and far less for him to study and do. So that's the relationship they had to have developed by now. It sounds like they are. But by the way Adam talked about Sam, the way Sam has talked about Adam, it seems like they're on the same page. You don't even have to worry about, like, when people say that, well, Gase doesn't talk to the defense. He doesn't need to. Greg Williams is running that. We kind of know what that's about. We know that Greg Williams, it's really two head coaches in a sense, right? I mean, they named Adam. Adam got more money. That's basically what happened here. But it's Greg's defense. And the fact that Adam lets Greg do what he does and doesn't have to get involved in that and actually takes input from Greg about some of the stuff that he's doing to see what Greg would do defensively. So Bart, and you know, we'll get you. Let's hope the signal's good now. But let's that part of it, man. The fact that you have the head coach isn't being pulled in eight different directions. That it's not a defensive minded head coach. Right. He was hired for this reason. But these two have got to be on the same page. And I feel like the success of this season is not necessarily wins and losses, but whether or not these two guys by the end of the year have you feeling like, you know what, there's synergy there, they're on the same page, and now I can feel confident about the two of them going forward.
When this season is over with, I don't care about the wins and losses because we understand that this is a process. We understand now that we have the draft equity to build and get elite talented players around Sam Darnold. I don't care if they get another player on defense. I think they're one or two pieces from being able to say, hey, we're good enough. Because you look at the teams that we expect to be in the running. We look at Dallas. Dallas has a couple elite linebackers. They have one pass rusher, no defensive backs, no safeties. The Jets have enough tools and enough talented players to be elite. What they don't have enough of is consistency on the offensive line, proving guys that we hope that they can cut their teeth. And we don't need them to be the Dallas Cowboys. We need them to be the O'Haras. We need them to be the Sneeds. We need them to be a group of guys that play so well together. They're so coached. They like each other so much that they play as a cohesive unit. And they play above their talent.
I think what you just said there, though, is something that if you're a Jets fan, I've never really thought of it this way until just now. The Jets kind of have to resemble what Coughlin's Giants from basically 06 to 11 yep. look like, or 12.
Exactly.
Right? Like that 6-year span with that group, you got some veteran, but you also have homegrown guys and a quarterback that might not be a superstar, but still very smart
and clutch,
resilient and clutch, obviously. And then you put some talent with them and an offensive line, which we know is the most important part, but that defense was everything for them.
Yep.
I almost feel like, is that the best case scenario for the Jets? Can they resemble what those Giants teams looked like? 800-919-3776 is the number. Let's take Joe in New Jersey. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Bart, thanks for taking my call. I have an A and B situation with the NFL. If there is no season with the NFL, how did it determine the draft pick for next year on who gets the number one picks?
That's a good question.
They're going to have to figure that out.
Yeah, I don't even think they thought that far.
No, they believe they're going to play. I think it starts okay. with that. But it's of course, you got to have a contingency plan once you get there.
Sure.
I mean, they can't go straight lottery. Do they just say same exact as last year? We'll just use the previous season once again, and do the Bengals get another number one pick?
Yeah, I don't think that'd be fair. But in my other situation, if I may interrupt, is if there is a season, well, I'll use New England as an example. They have quite a few players that aren't or will not be starting this season. They already said that.
Right.
So now if you get a team that is a playoff contender and they decide, oh, wait, listen, these guys aren't playing, and they kind of more or less tank the season, how does the NFL approach that? Because now you might have a team that's a playoff team and a team that wouldn't have been a playoff team. How do you, you know?
Yeah, the issue there, Joe, I think with the Patriots, and that's where I think you're in a tough spot if you're the NFL. And thanks for the call, Joe. I think, Bart, you can't, even though we're all kind of winking and laughing, oh, this is how Belichick's going to get Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
But the players are allowed to opt out. It's part of the agreement.
Yep.
They're absolutely allowed to do it. So you can't accuse them of anything. It is what it is.
See, but here's the thing, though. right? Because they lost those players and they were high-priced players, their money comes off the books. The NFL can hold them accountable to spend that money. So they can bring in a Logan Ryan and bring in a Jadeveon Clowney. You can say you should be able to win with that, right? Because now they have the money because they're not paying Hightower, they're not paying Chung, they're not paying Cannon. So they got plenty of space now. This is a team that
they're paying them a lot less. They get a little bit of money, but they don't get the full salary.
$350,000.
If you have a medical issue.
So they netting $8 million. When you think about how much Hightower's making, he's making top of the market at linebacker. So you can go get Clowney for a year. You can get Everson Griffin for a year. You can get Logan Ryan for a year. And the NFL should force all those teams that have guys that opt out to reinvest that money and spend that money because it comes off the books next year. But if they try and do that and try and replace them with guys that aren't making money, then I think that's that's not in these great sport. What do you call in the interest of the sport, or it's not like in the fairness of sportsmanship because you're trying to tank because you see opportunity.
The integrity
of the sport, right? Yeah. So like, it's still players out there for Bill Belichick to go and address and fill those holes with. Trust me.
Let's take Doug in Long Island. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Alan. Hey, Bart. How are you guys doing?
Good.
I'm just gonna say a couple quick things and then disengage. Hey, Bart. Man, looks like you should get a call to be someone's GM, so go and get some of that big money, brother. And Alan
smart,
just wants
smart
to say,
guy.
He is. He really is. No, he really is. And guys have said that. Guys like Marvin Jones and Mo Lewis have always told me about it. A really smart guy. But on to some other things. There are other guys that have been seen out of the bubble. Thank God they were friends of mine, and those friends sent me pictures and went to them and said, dude, take the damn mask off. Put on something different and get out of here. And they took heed. And I mean, these aren't small players. So I'm just hopeful that everything's okay. And the last two pieces are Chuck D tells me to tell you hello, Alan. He said great things about you. He was just in town recently. We're doing a book on One Square Mile on Roosevelt.
I'm doing
a documentary. Yeah. And secondly, and then lastly, I'm happy for Tibbs. I thought he or Kenny would get it. I think Steve thought so as well. But, you know, Steve's taking it easy. He's not a kind of, you know, he's a company guy. He's happy for the opportunity. He moves on.
Smart
he
to lay low right
bad.
Now. Yeah.
Yep, he'll always be low.
I'll say this. You know what I'm going to say? I'll say this about Steve is that the fruits of his labor might not be seen for a couple of years, but I think they'll be seen.
You are right, Alan. And before I let you go, I'll just say that, I think, you know, when we're in that world, you know, you've been in it. You're a real analytical guy, but you're a part of the press, too. And I just think that we're in the world where we act as if whomever has taken over the Knicks has taken over the Spurs in their heyday. Like, come in there. You've got nothing. Create it and give us room and draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do it all, you get fired. Please don't leave these guys in there for just 3 years. It's too short. Tibbs is a great coach. He's going to need time. These guys are going to take a while before they win more than 25 games. I'm telling you, you know.
Not this roster. Yeah. Not this roster.
And what do you think about this, lastly, before I get off? Do you think they should have just waived Trier? I have my opinions. I talked to Alonzo once in a while. It was last week. I spoke to him again. But what do you think they should have done? Do you think they could have gotten something for him? Because Donovan was surprised they didn't ask for anything for him.
I'll tell you what.
He's going to be a good player.
Well, he hasn't ended up anywhere yet, right?
No, not yet. I mean, exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that we got to see now how many teams really – I'm not sure if he – he probably wouldn't be eligible then to sign with anyone.
No.
Because he was waived. So I guess it wouldn't have mattered anyway if he could have been like a restart addition. But you know what, Doug? Great to hear from you. Thanks. All the best again to you and your family. I texted Zoe. I told him. I hate to see him go. I still think he's got a place in the league. I think he's got he's a specific player. You know, Bart, you see this in the NFL, too. You see this in a lot of sports. He's a specific – yeah, exactly. There's a place for him, and he's got to be developed into that style. This is who you are, and we're going to make you that player and let you be that player. And I see him as a Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams, that type of a guy that
you can just get
off the bench, instant offense, know what he is. And you know, I get tired a lot of times of we get this happening all the time. Yeah, but he doesn't play any defense. Yeah, but he's a walking freaking bucket. So let's take that for what it is and knowing, okay, well, he's not a two-way player.
Mm-hmm. What great coaches do is say, "Don't tell me what he can't do. Tell me what he can do, and we'll find a role, and he'll fill that role for us." Now, what he has to do is embrace that role and try and grow out of that role, but embrace that role and accept his role. Listen, I started off on short yardage goal line because I was a wrecking ball.
You're the same as him. You're the same exact thing as him. Undrafted, nobody really knew what to make of him. Came in and he was, I mean, a house on fire. Like, whoa, this dude's got some game. But luckily for you, you had coaches that saw what you were, and as you were just stating, took you from a situational guy and then grew you into something that became obviously a tremendous defensive asset.
Absolutely, and that's what you have to do. That's what great coaches do. That's why Bill Belichick is so great. That's why he takes players that was dismissed from other teams and gives a role for them. You look at the guy. Who is he? He just went down to Miami, and he was a pass rusher for them. He was a bust in Detroit. You know what I mean? Great coaches take players that may not be able to fit a certain scheme, and you find a scheme that they fit, and you utilize their talents, man. And you know that's what you do. But for everybody out there, for what I was saying earlier about the guys that's still available, you know what I mean, still some guys available for the Jets as well. You know, because they have that $3 million off the books that they were spending on Jamal. You still got guys like Drake Kirkpatrick out there. Snacks is still out there as far as a big defensive interior guy. Still got Logan Ryan out there, 29. You got
Somebody's getting him. Somebody's going to have to lock him up pretty soon. It's got to be the Giants, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got a guy like Timmy Jernigan inside. You know, he's only 27 years old. He was great for the Ravens, been injured. So it's still talent out there, you know, if you want to be able to try and create, you know, some guys that are going to fill these holes. And these are going to create opportunities for every guy that opts out. These guys are going to be willing to opt in. You know what I mean? Tony Jefferson will be perfect to replace Patrick Chung. I mean, he was a starter for the Ravens last year before he blew his ACL out. He's only 28 years old. He's a talented Pro Bowl caliber type of player. He's perfect. He's better than Patrick Chung and at Patrick Chung's best. So now you put him in that type of role. So sometimes opportunities open up for other people. You know what I mean? Because other people decide to bail out. So it's going to give other people opportunity to get back in the league and maybe stay in the league.
800-919-3776 is the number. This from Bleacher Report. An Eastern Conference GM says the Rudy Gobert-Donovan Mitchell fallout isn't over. Here's the quote. "They should be past it, but I don't think their egos will allow it. They both want to be superstars." End quote. Something I've been told to keep an eye on for a while now. Continue to keep an eye on that. Now, we all know this song. We all love this song. We all love the guy that sings this song, and that's Biz Markie. And reports are he's been hospitalized for a while, dealing with diabetes. And obviously, as you know, he's got a serious illness. He's got type 2 diabetes. And we know, obviously, during these times with COVID, that's somebody that's very susceptible to the virus as well. So
prayers up for
him. Shout outs to him. A fun guy, happy guy, Jersey guy. So, you know, all the best to him. We just wanted to play that one song. Everybody knows. You hear that song, you can't help but smile, right? First thing you do. Yeah.
Got what I need.
But right now, what we need, Bart, and this one's deep. There's some heavy stuff in this one. Audio files.
The audio file.
I'm telling you, man, like things getting real around here. And let's begin with Mark Emmert, the NCAA president, was on Get Up. And as we know, a lot of conferences are shutting down fall sports. The major football conferences, however, are saying, no, we've got to play football. Mark Emmert, however, now is wondering if maybe they should just postpone it a little.
A delayed start may well make sense, whether it's football or anything else. When people return to campus, we do get to see, we get to learn a lot from what's going on with professional sports.
What was your reaction when you saw the news of the Marlins?
Well, it certainly wasn't a surprise. I would be shocked if, as we get into college sports, that we don't have this occur. You know, it's not whether someone comes down with a virus, it's what you do when it happens.
Now, Heather Dinich is the other voice you hear on that. This is an interview that she has with Emmert. And yes, they were using Alexander Graham Bell's phone apparently at the time. But no, they aired this on Get Up. But still, that says a lot that they're at that point, or at least that he's at the point where maybe we need to at least delay this a little to make sure. Because you're seeing spikes all over the country. and there is a continued warning that it's only going to get worse in the fall, or at least it could second time around. All right, moving on the same very topic, Dr. Alan Sills, who is the NFL's chief medical officer, he's on Golic and Wingo, and he's talking about, as far as the NFL goes, you might not have a full season. Take a listen.
Yeah, we obviously recognize that that is a possibility. I mean, I think that the two words that I've used consistently and we've all said have been flexible and adaptable. We're going to have to be flexible and adaptable throughout the entire season. And so we absolutely recognize there's a situation where we would not think it's safe for a team to play or even for the league. So that's something that, again, we won't make that decision in isolation. We're going to take all of that data that we're collecting via the testing and the tracing. We'll work with the NFL Players Association. We'll work with the infectious disease experts, population health experts, public health authorities, and we'll make the best decision about what's safest for our players and all our personnel, as well as what's the most responsible course of action as members of the broader public health community, because we take that responsibility very seriously as well.
Again, let me remind you that as the NHL begins their scrimmaging and their season will begin this weekend with their restart, and they'll have their play-in round, I guess they're calling it, of series. They're in two different locations. They're in bubbles, and so far they have been clear. All of their testing so far has been clear. The NBA, for the second time now in the last 10 days, has also tested well over 300 players, and they still have zero positives inside the bubble. Bubbles seem to work. I mean, that's what it's now. Look, is it difficult for the NFL to play in a bubble? It could be difficult. I don't think it's impossible. Major League Baseball also, it seems like they have an isolated issue with the Marlins. It doesn't feel like it's something that was a complete outbreak, but they had an issue with the Marlins. And so now they've just got to basically quarantine the damn Marlins. Not that anybody cared to watch them play anyway. And then just go from there. So we'll see what the NFL does. But this idea that they're going to allow fans in the building and all that stuff, why don't we just take it one step at a time? Start playing games and making sure that everybody, you have, you know, zero positives first. Go with that, get through a training camp, and go from there. Speaking of which, the NBA, Adam Silver was on Good Morning America, and he discussed this as we saw what baseball is going through. He was asked if you would stop, if there's an outbreak, do you completely shut down the league and stop play?
It's not an exact science because nobody's ever done this before. And I think we have plans in place where we might pause, similar to what baseball is doing now. Probably if we had any significant spread at all, we'd immediately stop. And one thing we do is try to track those cases to determine where they're coming from and whether there had been spread on the campus. I would say, ultimately, we would cease completely if we saw that this was spreading around the campus and something more than an isolated case was happening.
I think it would be an even greater concern if it was on the campus, as they call it, in the bubble, because it's in the damn bubble. I mean, again, the whole idea of the bubble is that you enter it without the virus. You're tested, you're quarantined, and then you're in the bubble. And everybody in the bubble has gone through the testing and the quarantine and daily testing. He's back. Okay. So, you know, the point is that once you're in the bubble, you're supposed to be clear. There should not be any issues inside the bubble. So, but as he said, if there is an outbreak, you know, would he hesitate to stop the league? Here's what he said.
It's health and safety first. I mean, that's always been our guideposts going into this. We've worked very closely with the Players Association and all the teams on this. And we know it's one thing we've always pointed out. It's about relative safety at this point. When you look at the high case rates, not just in Florida, but around the country, we also had significant numbers of players who tested positive between the time we shut down our season and when we restarted in early July. So we jokingly have said, but maybe it's not so funny, that the safest place in the world may be on this campus at Disney right now. But if it were to turn out to not be the case, we certainly would stop.
Yeah, I just hope it doesn't get there. All right, Bart, you're back with us. Everything's good?
I'm good. I'm going to have a real stern talking to Comcast. What the hell's going on with my internet today?
What happened to all the sunlight?
Exactly, all the sunlight.
Now listen,
I do have Dish here, so sunlight could affect it. But I got Comcast too. I doubled up on my internet. I ain't never supposed to lose communication. Disrespectful to the Bart and Hines show. So disrespectful. They gonna hear about it.
It's also great when it happens during that previous segment when we're talking Jets and we're talking football. And I'm asking you for your experience and insight, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's not there.
Tumbleweeds.
Hi, everybody. Anyways, wait till you hear this, because I don't think you've heard this. Michael Porter Jr., who plays for the Denver Nuggets, who's mostly been injured. He had back issues when he was drafted. A lot of Knicks fans were mad,
Ray Santiago,
that they did not draft him because he had so much talent as a high school player, as a prep player.
Yes.
He barely played in college because of the back issue. And, of course, Knicks fans hear back issue like, yeah, no, we're all set, right? But then, like, you know, every now and then he has, like, a moment in the gym and everybody's just flipping out about, oh, my God, he's going to be a superstar. But then, the more you get to know a player, oh, boy. All right, so Michael Porter Jr. was doing a little Snapchat Q&A. And so he was talking about the virus and the experience, and, well, he said this.
Personally, I think that the coronavirus is being used, obviously, for a bigger agenda. And it's being used for population control in just terms of being able to control the masses of people. I mean, because of the virus, the whole world is being controlled. I mean, you're required to wear masks. And who knows what will happen when this vaccine comes out. You might have to have the vaccine in order to travel. Like, that'd be crazy. I've never been vaccinated in my life. I've never had any shots or anything like that. So it could get crazy, but it's definitely an agenda behind everything that's going on right now.
Bro, how did he ever?
By the way, he's not joking. Like, everybody, some people thought maybe he was just messing around. Like this makes the Kyrie Irving flat Earth thing just.
They need to start.
This is about population control.
They need to start. They need to start a. They need to start a fraternity. Them and that doctor that end up sitting there talking about she got the cure and that you're getting pregnant with demon sperm. They need to start them their own. They need to go to their own island. Forget Fight Island. They need to get their own island. They need to go cohabitate. Habitate or whatever the hell you're supposed to say that. Man, you just lost. Man, get him some milk. I don't know what the hell going on. What is he talking about, man? Jeez.
So the Nuggets, Tim Connelly, who's the president of basketball operations for the Nuggets, of course, you know, saw this and went, oh, great. So he had himself a little chat with Porter Jr. And they haven't really commented so far on it. But, of course, because the head coach always has to speak, Michael Malone did say, obviously, I'm not the thought police. I'm not going to tell any of our players what they can and can't say. All I would say is just be sensitive to the current situation in our country and throughout the world in regards to coronavirus. And I would probably add to that, that if you don't have anything intelligent to say, don't say anything.
Stay off the internet, man.
I mean, I need him now to have a tinfoil hat on his head when he's out on the court for warmups now. Because, I mean, like that stuff, though, you know, like, what are you doing?
Kyrie's like, I found my third big three.
Oh, see, almost like Kyrie almost now has to say to himself, like, no, he can't own crazy in this league. Although, all due respect to Kyrie, he did just lay out like a 1.5 mil, right, for WNBA players.
Yeah.
Right? He put up some
money. For those who sit out.
Yeah, I got to give him respect for that because there are some WNBA players who aren't getting paid. Who are sitting out because they're opting out because of the virus. And he's doing the right thing by supporting them. And that's a good thing. So while we're teasing Kyrie, let's also recognize the fact that he did some good things in the world here.
See, when he does something like that, he's Uncle Drew. When he be talking about that other craziness, he's talking about he's Kyrie. Like, man, somebody go get Kyrie. He out there naked again running around the streets. No. That's like that's the crazy part of him. When he's humble and nice and, you know, thoughtful, that's Uncle Drew.
I guess. All I know is that this one, though, from Porter Jr. is one that – and it's funny because you have a player saying that while you have other players who are admittedly concerned about getting – you know, like they even going into the bubble. There were players who were just straight up like, I'm concerned. I don't want to catch it. I don't know if I can trust it. And yet what we're seeing, Bart, is the bubble so far, as you heard Silver say, might be the safest place on Earth right now.
Told
because
you,
of how well they've handled it again so far.
hey, let me come to the bubble. Let me and the family come to the bubble. Let us go to Disney World. Kick everybody else out. We'll quarantine for 14 days. We'll do the show from down there, Alan. And then when we finish with our 14-day quarantine, we'll just go to Disney World. We'll go to Magic Kingdom. Forget the easy passes. Forget the fast pass.
Yes.
We want the dudes with the checkered vets look like they work for McDowell's to take us to the front of the line and make sure we get on whenever we want to.
Go to the Dumbo ride, little teacups. You good with that?
Yeah, man.
I'm okay with that. We have to figure out something, though. I didn't get to spend a lot of time on the Yankees. We did open with more of the Astros and Joe Kelly throwing at Correa. Bregman, Correa talking to him. We talked about the Mets, of course, and yet another young pitcher looking good. Good for the Mets. Now you've got DeGrom tonight. Can they score him some runs? Like they were just scoring runs like crazy up in Fenway. So you got that to watch. The Yankees will be back in action today, and that is great. And maybe it's just George King, or maybe it's the Post, or maybe it's just me just being excited about this Yankee season. We've had to wait now a couple of days, all because of the damn Marlins, for the Yankees to play a game. And now you go from, hey, we're going to play 60 games in 66 days. Now it's even less, right? That's the part that I think is unfair to teams like the Yankees. But okay, they're handling it the right way. Here's Brian Cashman talking to reporters about how the Yankees have handled the idea that they've done nothing wrong, they don't have any positives, but they have had to be shut down to figure out where they're going to play next. Take a look.
No question. We're in a world where no one has dealt with anything like this before, so I think we all need to be pliable and be able to pivot and at least be open to adjust. And I'm really proud of our organization thus far, from our owner, Hal Steinbrenner, who's been engaged with Rob Manfred, and all the way down into our player ranks. You know, when I get on the phone with our manager and ask 45 minutes before our bus is due to depart for New York, what do you think if we instead pivoted and went to Baltimore so we could play some games down there? And again, everybody seems to be all in. I got on the phone with Zach Britt, same type of conversation, same type of results. He pulled his player union group and off we are. You know, I got Camden Yards in my background for a reason, because it's off to Baltimore.
See, I love that. And he said the attitude to tell us where and we will be there. And Britton is quoted in this Post story where he said, we were given some options on what we possibly could do. Guys felt like, obviously, we want to play. Our team has done a pretty good job, I think, following the protocols, and our medical staff has done a great job of sanitizing the visiting clubhouse and things like that. We felt like we didn't want to take 3 or 4 days off. This is an opportunity to go to Baltimore and play. That's what we wanted to do, and that's what we decided. Bart, this is clearly trust. That's what this is. This is, I mean, that's what you want. You know, he goes on to say the Yankees will go above and beyond the measures they need to keep us in a safe environment. He said, from player standpoint, we are confident. We feel if we follow the guidelines and with our organization going above and beyond a lot of the protocols to ensure our safety, I think we should be okay. How critical is this when it comes to the player organization relationship when you're going through something like this? Because there's been so much mistrust. There's been so much concern. You see players, David Price, who's not even playing, who opted out, going right after the league the minute something happened with the Marlins. Just attacking them, right? Going right at it. This is why you couldn't play. You can't trust the league to take care of us. And the Yankee players are saying, we absolutely trust the Yankees. That we see what they're doing, and they're taking care of us. That, to me, says so much. And it's another example when we talk about good organizations. And it's so funny. We always talk, by the way, Bart, his signal's messed up, so I probably have to close out the show. Apologize, but it's Han Solo right here. Again, 800-919-3776.
It's a CMOS.
Maybe it is. We'll get it fixed by tomorrow. But we talk about culture. That's like the new buzzword now in sports. Are we going to build a culture? You know, when you talk about building a culture, you know what that means? That means your team stinks. Like, you know what culture is? Culture is that you have success as a franchise. That's all it is. You have a successful franchise. It's run well. Players trust management. Management takes care of players. It sounds so simple, doesn't it? But what the Yankees have here, evidenced by what Zach Britton, who represents the players, all right, what the Yankees have here is a trust. It starts there. And that's how you can win. They know they have something special. They know they have an opportunity. And instead of the players being a little panicked, and I'd be panicked. I don't want that. I didn't want them. I said it. The last thing I want is put my players in that visitor's clubhouse at Citizens Bank Park. No chance. You got to sanitize that. And I'll tell you what, Phillies, if you're so confident, you guys play in the visitor's clubhouse. We'll take yours. You know, like you have every reason to be concerned because you don't want something to derail a season for the Yankees that you feel like could help win you a championship. You really think there's a good chance for them. But you hear the players, was there any hesitation at all? Of course there's concern. You're going to have concern. But the players are basically saying the team is doing the right thing for us. They are taking care of us. We trust everything they're doing. And so we want to play. So we'll trust our team and trust that they're doing the right things. And where they want us to go, we'll go. And we're going to go play. That's what we want to do. What a great message. That's a message of confidence, right? That's a message that tells you that this group certainly trusts each other. And boy, when you have something like that, by the way, that's culture. That's all culture is. It's, I believe you're doing the best thing for me and the players. And the ownership feels like, well, let's take care of our guys because we know they're going to do the best for us. And then the Marlins, on the other hand, because if it's as isolated as we're seeing, when are we going to get the story? Because we're waiting for it. Bart said it earlier in the show. When are we getting that story that tells us, oh, by the way, a couple of Marlins players went out after the game in Atlanta or went to this place and came back, and pretty much that's now why it's rampant throughout the organization, right? That, like, it's got to be something where, you know, they broke protocol, whatever protocol is supposed to be. They're not in a bubble. I don't think anybody's – there's no snitch line in Major League Baseball. There's no one following them out of the hotel after the game's over. You know, there's suggestions of what to do. Hey, wear a mask and, you know, try to avoid people, socially distant, be smart. All that stuff is suggested. But how is it enforced when there's no bubble, when you're traveling from city to city? It's not. All it takes is one or two people that think, yeah, this is nothing. We'll be fine. We can go out to this place. We'll be good. And you've just taken down an entire your entire team. You've shut the team down. Now, do they have a chance to win a championship? No. So maybe there's less accountability. Maybe there's less of any concern for them. But what you see from the Yankees, what Zach Britton's saying, what Cashman's saying, I don't know. Like, I loved it. I loved every point of it. It makes you feel like, all right, this organization, they're on the right track. And if anybody can endure this thing, it's they can. And they also understand where they are. Yeah, we're dealing with something. But we got to work together and we'll get through it. Trust each other and we'll get through it. It's a great example. And it got me excited about the Yankees even more. Let's take one call here. And Spike in New Jersey. Hey, Spike. What's
hey,
up, Spike?
Fellas.
We got like a minute. We just got a minute.
I know you okay. Do. Real shout out to Ollie Mills and to Jack Curran. Real shout out to Ollie Mills and Jack yep. Curran, two of gotcha. The best coaches ever in that era. And by the way, if there was ever voice recognition required to get your phone on or get into somewhere, Doug and Steve, boy, they got the same exact voice.
Yeah, you're right about
anyway,
that. They do sound very
yeah,
similar.
Yeah, I heard about the players and got some pictures, too, from someone I know, and it's irresponsible. It really is. I think there's one thing you got to correct. Well, not correct, my opinion, on the Heat, on the Miami and on the and the Phillies. You don't know about the Phillies yet, Alan. It's
well, they've been testing. They've been testing for 2 days.
I know, but the incubation takes 6 to 7 days.
Okay. Well, they'll keep testing, and hopefully they'll be fine. But so far, so
good. I hope they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about Woody yet?
Haven't heard anything official yet, and thanks for the call, Spike. We do have to run. Nothing official. I was thinking we might hear something today, but probably not, although, you know, still plenty of day left. So we'll see when the announcement's made and when the conference will be, but I'm sure they want to get it done before the NBA restart begins. Bart finally reconnects just in time for us to then close out the show. We've got to, figure this thing out.
I'm sitting there resetting everything.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.